Life and I have a complicated relationship. He doesn't always show up the way I want. Neither do I. He is an unreliable lover, the kind who brutally wounds you and then has the chutzpah to become beautiful and make you chase after him again. Any bona fide therapist would flag this relationship as codependent, emotionally unstable, and even toxic. She would recommend a treatment plan and refer me to someone out of network. Even the Gemara wrestled with this. For 2.5 years, the sages debated to be born, or better not to have been born at all. They concluded, better not to have been born, and yet, since we are already here, we must examine what we make of life. Unlike the sages, I was given no time to debate, no opportunity to object. I was forcibly invited into this relationship. As if life needed one more complication, my anniversary with life, my birthday, usually falls somewhere inside the 3 weeks, that narrow corridor of Jewish time when celebration starts to feel suspicious. The calendar sits low and says, not now. Remember the house. And there it is, the 3 weeks and my birthday dread, counting down beside each other. The calendar anxious. So am I. I dread that celebrating life becomes my responsibility. I get impatient with the detailed planning. By the time I've put in all the effort, the day is already gone. And I also dread wanting too much and pretending I don't. How big should this birthday be, anyway? I am not getting any younger. Surely by now I've earned cheerful Botox to lift my heavy heart and smooth out the dread. Do I really need strangers in a restaurant to sing me happy birthday as proof that this day matters? Should I let the lavish dress, the dinner and the spa carry the weight of the whole year? If I am honest, what I really want is to stop performing my own birthday. This year, my birthday does not merely fall inside the 3 weeks. At sundown, it walks straight into Tisha B'Av. Mourning collides with celebration. Tisha B'Av is the black hole at the heart of the Jewish calendar, where exile, ruin, and catastrophe collapse into one day. Tisha B'Av does not stay in the past. It keeps finding us. The spies came back from the promised land with fear instead of faith. The first temple burned. The second temple fell. Beitar collapsed. Jerusalem was razed. England expelled its Jews. Spain uprooted one of the greatest Jewish civilizations ever built. The deportations from the Warsaw Ghetto to Treblinka began. The day accumulates. Every generation adds to it. Then, on July 22, my mother added me to the calendar. Life turned my birthday into an oxymoron, sending me to the floor without music or dancing and somehow still expecting me to celebrate. No wine, no dinner, just a hurried card slipped under the door. Happy Tisha B'Av birthday. In the ruins. Deal with it. Love, life. How is a woman in love supposed to deal with a Tisha B'Av birthday? By Jewish law, ordinary life yields to mourning. We fast. Beyond the fast, no bathing, no leather shoes, no oils or creams, no joyful Torah learning. Even love is asked to keep its distance. Every Jew carries the day differently. I don't know what kind of Jew I am according to whom. But when it comes to Tisha B'Av, I am the reluctant Jew, unable to fully enter the day, unable to escape it. This is the hardest part to look at. The second temple fell because of baseless hatred. That fact feels like a finger pressed into my own eye. Rome may have set the fire, but the first cracks had already formed within. Can a people mourn a house it helped break from the inside? Generation after generation, the grief passed down like a house key to a home no longer standing. 2,000 years is a long time. No wonder it is easy to underfeel. And yet, there is something during this time that constricts. A heaviness in the air. A stillness that knows. What does the destruction of the temple from 2,000 years ago have to do with you? Life asks. Nothing, except that another one of my birthdays fell on Tisha B'Av. The summer of 1980. The last birthday I ever celebrated with my whole extended family. During the Iranian Revolution, we left for Paris first, calling it a vacation. Time passed. We kept waiting, hoping the situation would calm down. It never did. We didn't know, standing there with 3 suitcases, that we were already leaving. The door we walked out of would not open from the other side, not for us. After making home in 3 countries, I began to understand that exile is not a geographical matter. Exile is being locked out of a beloved house. It is the ache of a home, a person, a version of yourself, gone. For a long time, I mistook my love of travel for curiosity. But I am not only chasing the new, I am searching for the old hiding inside it, a street I have never walked that somehow knows me, a meal that tastes like someone I lost, a stranger who feels like a hug from home. Travel, I understand now, is longing in motion. I am searching the world for traces of a home I can no longer return to. Through the years, longing became more than a visitor. It moved in, deeper and deeper, until it became my permanent home. Perhaps that is why I feel something wordless before the Western Wall. It is not only a wall, it is a remnant, a survivor, the last visible witness of what used to be whole. It is a magnetic, unexplainable pull, felt even by people who do not know what they believe. People come from everywhere to press their hands and their tears against the stone with folded prayers, private griefs, and impossible requests. At the Kotel, we stop pretending that loss does not live inside us. We mourn this ruin because the temple was never just stone. It is a lost home, as if the spirit of what that building represented bypassed our minds and went straight into the nervous system. That wall, massive, broken, yet defiantly upright, is my relationship with life made visible. And perhaps that is why, as my birthday draws closer, the old argument between us begins again. Life leans back and nudges. What are you doing for your birthday? What are you doing for my birthday? But I hold my tongue. Nothing. Surprises are your department. My nothing is not humility. I argue with him all night. Whatever you give me, it is not enough. I want him to celebrate me, every day, not just once a year. I want him to notice me when I am not asking to be noticed, in an unplanned hour, in an ordinary corner. But that is not what you get when life is your lover. Life has no shame, no regret. He disappears without warning and returns without apology, as though he has done nothing wrong. Then he expects forgiveness. Because I am chronically romantic, which I call a gift and he calls a disability, I forgive him. But I still want him to show up gallant, bouquet in hand, some shy proof that he has been looking forward to seeing me. And this is our dance. When we argue, he is deaf to my love language and I am blind to his. A tango that tangles before the music even begins. I test him by doing nothing, by waiting, by closing the curtains on a beautiful morning and letting him prove himself. He tests me differently. His Tisha B'Av birthday in the ruins card is not because he is stingy. He wants to know what kind of lover I am. He asks me to sit low, take off my shoes, and stay present in the thick of it. Not only on Tisha B'Av, but on the days that arrive without warning, the ones that quietly undo me. Will I follow him when I cannot yet see where he is leading me, into the moonless nights? Into the mud and the chaos? Into the ugly and the uninvited? Will I sit with him on the floor in old stained pajamas when he cannot give me what I want, or simply says no? It's not fair, haven't we had enough? Who needs more betrayal, more abandonment, another death of something we thought would always live? Some days are so cruel they split us open, a phone call. A diagnosis, a child, a mother, a country, a door that will not open again. A pain that feels like an amputated limb, an absence we will keep reaching for. Sometimes what he asks of me is more than I know how to bear. On those days, he is not my lover. He is my enemy. My body becomes a war zone. I want revenge. I want to throw the vase of flowers at him. I want to shatter his silence, pound on his chest until his cruel heart gives way, until he feels, if only for one unbearable moment, what it is like to keep breaking the person who keeps choosing you. Life is not faithful in the way I want. And yet, when I am most furious, he comes closer, puts his hand on my shoulder, as if we are still together. Even in the ruins, he knows where to stand so the light catches his stubborn face at the right angle. Half coming, half going, as though he prefers to be misunderstood. He taps his foot, whistles, and says nothing. Life has never been fair. Just persuasive, even in disguise, he is persuasive, hiding behind common clothes, while I am distracted waiting for his grand entrance, he hands me a peach that bruises in my hand. He becomes the smile of a newborn, an elderly couple holding hands and walking very slow. He gifts me the long, unstoppable laughter with a childhood friend who calls after decades, at the end of a lost Wednesday. He wears the ocean, walks through the forest, climbs the mountain, because despair cannot have the last word. And sometimes I am stunned by the impossible coincidences that whisper, I see you. I haven't forgotten. He does all of that, and more, just enough to make it impossible for me to leave. Maybe this is just another one of his tests, not whether I can forgive him, but whether I can see him whole. Neither the ruins nor the peaches get to call themselves the whole story. Because behind the curtain of longing is a hidden truth. We can only grieve what was profoundly real. Loss is not proof that life has turned against us. Paradoxically, it is proof that life was here, of what mattered, of what was loved. Perhaps the only way I know not to leave my lover is to live more like him, to keep returning, to create where there has been destruction, to try to become whole inside the ruins. Every year, before my birthday, I open my private ledger, an honest accounting of all the reasons to stay. This is my way of celebrating, remembering the places, the people and the person I was before I believed wholeness could end. And here I am, still, 55 ways not to leave your lover. And counting. Hila Gohari Karandian is an Israeli-Iranian-American essayist whose work explores Jewish identity, memory, and the human heart. She writes Change of Heart stories on Substack.